This podcast is brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or download the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store. Enjoy.
Hello again and welcome to Tech Plus, where we discuss all the latest tech news in 60 minutes, whether it's South African or international. We've got you covered here on Tech Plus. As always, my name is Ion with you and joined by Kane. Kane, hello. Welcome back.
Hello. It's a new week. Well, end of one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's almost the mid-month, which is crazy. I can't believe this.
Do you feel the sun going down a little bit later every night? Is it just me?
I haven't noticed it yet.
I feel like I have, man.
Is it not with all the stormy weather recently? I haven't really seen
that. I feel like once it gets to 6 p.m., I'm expecting it to be dark. But then maybe it's still got a little bit of light there on the horizon, I'm hoping.
Well, it's just the rest of July, and then we've got August, and then the 1st of September, we're into spring, so maybe it's not too unbelievable.
Yeah, I guess it can't just get dark later out of nowhere. It has to happen slowly but surely. So
exactly.
I wonder if we're on the slow extension of the amount of available daytime we have. That would be quite cool.
Yeah, exactly. And also still load shedding list here in South Africa. We've passed that 100 mark recently, 100-day mark. And they're only doing load reduction now in places like Gauteng. Some people are saying, it's still load shedding. It's just a different name. But we're not bothered about any of that over here.
No, we don't experience any of that, hey?
No, thank goodness. And let's hope it stays that way, especially with the crazy weather that Cape Town's been having for the past week. You would expect that the network would be so constrained. If it can survive this, the peak of winter and all the cold fronts and all the heaters and stuff, I think we're doing pretty well then.
Then there's no excuse.
Yeah.
Then we have to. I mean, if we can survive middle of winter, then middle
of
summer.
Yeah, and all those storms,
no,
and imagine all the heaters that were on. Well, I mean, at the same time, thousands were knocked out, from off the grid. People still without electricity due to the storm. So maybe that's also helping the situation. I don't know.
Well, here's something very interesting. When is you bought from Temu, but have you bought from it again?
Not yet.
Really? And how about Shein? Because they're often associated in the same sentence.
I actually looked at some clothes on Shein recently.
Oh, yeah?
And they're still in the cart. I'm still deciding if I want it.
Still getting emails about your cart waiting to be checked out.
Did you forget? are they supposed to be so pushy when you forget something in the cart, hey? I never knew they would do that.
We saw you were interested in a product. We'd like to suggest that you buy it.
Yeah. I think someone telling me how to check out, in case I don't know how to check out and I forgot the things in the cart. They're giving me a little push.
Imagine the person behind the desk when you're buying your groceries from Spar starts telling you how money works. Maybe that's the problem. So Temu is apparently, and this is something I wasn't ever too familiar with, but in the e-commerce land, there's obviously a few check boxes you must check. A few check marks that must be made before you can just start selling something on Takealot, for example. But apparently, Temu has been accused of selling illegal Wi-Fi and Bluetooth devices in South Africa.
Whoops.
Which sounds like a very, bad thing. But let's find out exactly what that means. So, Temu is apparently allowing merchants on its platform to sell electronics without the necessary regulatory approvals from South African authorities. Sellers are offering products with radio transceivers like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth dongles that don't have approval from the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, or ICASA.
ICASA.
The platform also lets South Africans buy electrical devices with batteries or that connect to mains electricity without the necessary clearance from the National Regulator of Compulsory Specifications, or the NRCS. These regulatory requirements exist to ensure devices can safely be connected to the electrical grid and don't interfere with local wireless networks. Apparently, a My Broadband reader recently contacted ICASA after they noticed uncertified devices for sale on Temu. They asked how it handles, this is, okay, how they handle enforcement in online market marketplaces and markets. And the regulator explained that when it comes to Takealot, merchants need to upload an ICASA certificate.
ICASA.
Or ICASA certificate for every device that they want to sell on the platform. Now, that's very interesting to me. I didn't know that you actually have to get a certificate of compliance for every product that you want to sell on Takealot. And that is either an electrical compliance to say, A, this device is certified to connect to South Africa's grid, or B, a Wi-Fi or transmission license, which says, A, this product is actually allowed to transmit data across these spectrums and radio waves. And I didn't know that. I mean, I would actually imagine I had 30, 40, 60, 100 different products that I want to sell on Takealot, and I need that certificate for every single one of them. That's something I wouldn't have expected to actually be part of the process or a requirement that one needs to do in order to be compliant.
But it makes sense.
It does.
Have you seen on some communication things, I think sometimes even on phones or on the boxes of your new phone, there will be a little sticker and it will say ICASA approved. Have you noticed? Even on walkie-talkies or telephones, anything that's to do with communication, anything that's sending and receiving signals, there would be, if it's in South Africa, there should be a little sticker on it saying ICASA approved. Because they regulate all that stuff, obviously to make sure there's no signal interference.
Wonder how much money it costs to get one of those certificates, and who's actually there doing the certification? Is it some guy trained in all things transmission? do people just pick him up as a Wi-Fi router? Who is this guy?
Yeah. So obviously the Temu stuff won't have that sticker on. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and I guess that could mean potentially that you might plug some. You might, if you're buying something from Temu that is of a heavy, hardware point of view, a power tool, I probably wouldn't suggest it because of that reason specifically. Because it could be something that's certified, let's say, for America's 120 volts.
Oh, my word, y'all.
And now you go throw double 240 volts through this power tool.
That's just not going to end well, eh?
Your power washer becomes a fire starter. What happens?
Fire starter. I love it.
Flamethrower.
Yeah, oh my word. Yeah, that's actually very true, eh? I didn't even think
of it. So if you're doing something like that, or maybe you're buying, let's say, a multi-plug charger. You're buying something that can charge six devices at a time or something like that. I just probably wouldn't do that. But if you're buying a little Bluetooth receiver for your car to connect to via radio waves so that you can play song, I'm pretty sure you'll be fine.
Yeah, because that's a very small scale. It's not a powerful thing.
Small scale.
But if it's going to start interfering with aircraft up there, would imagine causing a plane crash because you're broadcasting your music on a...
Buy an antenna from Temu and you start getting air traffic control coming through your TV.
And you're broadcasting your Eminem music.
Did you see Eminem released a new song?
I heard about it.
He was part of a new collaboration and it's called Toby.
I haven't listened to it yet. Is it good?
Yeah, it's based off of Spider-Man. Well,
is it radio friendly?
Yeah, it actually is. I'm sure it'll be fine. He actually, it's a song and it has three different people on it. I'm not going to try and remember their names because I'm going to botch it. I haven't really heard of them before, but I know Eminem was at the end of that.
Wow.
And it was called Toby.
And sure, that's pretty
it's
cool.
It's pretty lyrically good. Next up, we're taking a look at a mining giant that was hacked. So, local mining giant Sibanye-Stillwater, one of the world's biggest producers of platinum and gold, has revealed that its global IT systems have suffered a cyber attack. In a notice informing stakeholders, the company said it has implemented security measures to isolate its IT systems and protect critical data. As soon as the company became aware of the incident, immediate containment measures were implemented in line with their incident response plan to proactively isolate their IT systems and safeguard their data. They can continue to say that while the investigation into the incident is ongoing, there has been limited disruptions to the group's operations globally. I was thinking to myself, I wonder what a cyber attack, what can you get out of a mining giant in terms of cyber attack? You know what you probably would get? It would probably be very high stakes crime stuff, the transportation strategies, how they transport all the minerals that they mine, how they safeguard it, how they sell it, you know, all that kind of stuff. Probably a lot of the logistical side of the mine would probably be what's being sought after there. And maybe some access to financial systems and things like that, if there are, if that's something that they would do. But yeah, you never really hear about a mining giant getting hacked.
No, yeah, like what do you want?
Bit of an interesting one. So if we hear about any jewel thief type, you know, movie level hacks and robberies, we know where it came from.
Yeah.
Apparently, as well, Elon's Neuralink is preparing for a second patient. So anyone who didn't know, Neuralink, let's rewind a year ago, decided, hey, we can probably start doing animal testing. So they found a chimpanzee, implemented this Neuralink chip into this this chimpanzee's brain, and basically taught the chimpanzee to play games on the computer with a controller and then unplug the controller.
Sure.
And it only used its brain to basically play this video game. And that was their first successful animal testing. And this year they did their first human trial with an individual who can, you know, operate his computer and things like that. So he has the Neuralink chip implanted, and things that he can do, for example, is he just looks at his computer and he can move his mouse wherever he wants without having to use a mouse.
Wow.
You know, he can type and text and interact with technology. Cool. I think he's also partially disabled to a degree, so it is actually helping him in his greater livelihood and quality of life. But Elon Musk's Neuralink is now preparing for the second implant. And that's pretty crazy. So in a wide-ranging discussion broadcast on Musk's social platform X or Twitter, the billionaire and several key Neuralink staffers described the current device's capabilities and future possibilities, such as repairing paralysis and memory loss. They also outlined steps the teams would take in future surgeries to avoid some setbacks that occurred in the wake of the first implementation on the Arizona man Nolan Olbar. The long-term goal is to mitigate the longer civilizational risk of AI or artificial intelligence, Musk said. Neuralink can help with that by creating a closer symbiosis between human intelligence and digital intelligence. The idea, Musk said, is to give people superpowers.
Mm.
Very interesting.
Superpowers, eh?
And while doing that, he's also just running a social media platform and casually trying to get to Mars and connect internet all around the world, and also build an electric car.
And winning lawsuits. Winning lawsuits. That's another one.
And dealing with 25 active lawsuits.
All in a day's work for Musk.
I think he's like, there's no way he does that all himself. He has seven little Musks somewhere, just
massive team, right?
Yeah, have you watched that movie with it's called Meet Dave. It's got Eddie Murphy.
Mm-mm.
And there's 100 little Eddie Murphys inside of Eddie Murphy's brain controlling Eddie Murphy.
It's
called Meet Dave.
Is it an old movie?
It's a good movie. It's called Meet Dave.
Is it on Netflix?
Good question.
Probably not. I haven't seen it there.
Just have a look for it, because that's the only way I can see Musk being able to do that. If in actuality he's actually just a really tiny individual. There's 30 of him in his brain just managing all
like
of these
control
moving plates.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Speaking of electric cars, though, and Tesla and Musk, did you know that apparently the used electric car price market in South Africa is going down quite a lot? So it's becoming quite a lot cheaper for the average consumer to purchase a second-hand electric car vehicle. So the average prices of these used electric vehicles have declined significantly in South Africa in recent months. My Broadband has been tracking the prices of sub 500,000 rand used electric vehicles in South Africa for several weeks and observed that certain models had seen their prices declining by around 20,000 to 30,000 in a single month. For example, one BMW i3 that was selling for around 310,000 rand on We Buy Cars has seen its price slashed to around 287,000 rand. When My Broadband previously compiled a list of the most affordable used EVs in March 2024, the best price on a BMW i3 was 329,000, and that was already a big improvement over the original BMW i3 that was going for 400,000 in July 2023. In that same assessment, the most affordable used electric vehicle was a 2014 Nissan Leaf priced at 239,900 rand with just 35,000 k's on the clock. The price had since come down to about 230,000 rand. And according to Auto Trader CEO George Malini, the average price of used electric vehicles listed on the car classifieds platform dropped by 6% to 1.1 million in the year to date compared to the same period last year. So that is a good sign for us. It's good to see electric vehicle prices going down a little bit, coming back down to earth. And I mean, 287,000 isn't necessarily cheap. But for 214,000, picking up a 2014 Nissan Leaf with 35,000 Ks on the clock is not a bad deal. And South Africa kind of needs that second-hand electric vehicle market to become a little bit more fruitful. Otherwise, you know, I don't think I would ever buy an electric vehicle new. I just don't think that, I don't think it's financially feasible. It's like 1 million rand or more sometimes for some of these electric vehicles. Like the average price of a secondhand electric vehicle
Like
above 1 million rand. That tells
No, it's overrated, actually. I feel it's overrated. Anyway, let's go for some music, and then I've got a funny story for you.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. So, what is the most dangerous thing that can happen while you are following Google Maps to a destination? And you need to keep your eyes on Google Maps on your phone or whatever to get to that destination. Well, you can just ask Google, because they started showing pop-up ads to some drivers while they are on the road.
Oh, yeah?
So imagine you're driving and now all of a sudden there's this pop-up ad and you can't see where you go. And you can't get rid of it. I mean, that's just bound to cause an accident.
Turn left in. Would you like some KFC?
What do you think? Do you think that's a problem? They say it's a potentially dangerous feature.
It's a terrible idea.
Yeah, because even if it's like small at the bottom of it, you want to get rid of it. So you're gonna quickly, you know, eyes off the road and then on your phone and just, you know, click click, get rid of it. You know.
I think it's bad because one part, you might be driving somewhere very important. You might be in a place you've never been before. You might not be familiar with the area. You might be relying a lot on your GPS sense versus your natural, you know, sense of direction. And in the event that a pop-up does appear, a normal user who is in a comfortable environment will not be concerned about the ad and just continue navigating. But a concerned user will reach to the screen to close the ad, to continue his navigating journey, which, number one, causes a visual distraction. Number two, also causes a physical distraction, because the user actually has to interact with the device. So I do agree, it is a bit of a dangerous one. And why do we need an ad there?
Yeah.
Unless it was a functional ad that could be controlled with voice prompt, I don't think it has a place on my sat-nav
middle
of a journey.
Especially if you are like completely, you know, reliant on it and you really don't know where you are and you really need to see where you're going, and now all of a sudden this thing is popping up.
And you got to try close it. Have you ever tried to like, have you ever been driving on a bumpy road and try to interact with a phone? It's really a battle and a half, to say the least. And now you've got to perform one of those surgeries in order to disable ads on an important drive.
It's not a good move for Google there, hey?
No, definitely keep the ads to voice only. Even make your ad audio-based.
Yeah.
You know, just do an audio prompt. But anyway.
Exactly.
Samsung Galaxy Fold 6 and Flip 6 prices and launch details for South Africa have been revealed. Do you ever see yourself getting a flip phone? Did you have one of those Motorolas?
I used to. Mine was it a Motorola? Yeah, it was a Motorola. And I think I also had a Samsung Flip, if I'm not mistaken.
You know what gets me about the flip phones these days? Is when I used to have a Motorola, I opened it with the sheer power of gravity. You know, you just flick it.
Yeah.
You can flick it down, you can flick it up, you can use your thumb, you can do whatever you want. I don't know how comfortable I am trying to perform a wrist flicked phone open maneuver. You know, now your phone goes flying out, or it can't. How much force can it survive opening up, you know? Because when you flipped a Motorola, that thing was built on the back of dried Weet-Bix, where it was pretty strong.
It was.
But it
never broke.
These phones kind of just have a little bit of metal and glass to kind of. So how good it is at just flipping open, I don't know. But I do know that I spoke to a user that tested out the phone, and they say, you know, it's probably one of the best phones that they've ever had. So maybe flip is the future, and if it is, this might be for you. We've got some prices on what the Galaxy Flip 6 is going to cost, and I'm telling you now, it's not going to be cheap. It is absolutely not going to be cheap. But it does have some crazy cool stats. We've got 2K display. We've got the brand new Snapdragon 8 CPU, 12 gigs of RAM, 256 and 500 gig respectively. You've got 50 megapixel front and rear cameras with 12 and 10 respectively for the front. 5G capable, Wi-Fi 7. So one of the first phones coming out with Wi-Fi 7. So, you know, what's very interesting about Wi-Fi 6 is if you have, let's say, 500 megasecond download on fiber, your Wi-Fi 6 capable device is probably not going to be able to download at 500. It's going to have a really hard time pulling that kind of speed.
Yeah.
Whereas Wi-Fi 7 is probably going to be able to do something like that. The Galaxy Flip 6 will be priced at about 26,000 Rand. The Galaxy Fold 6 will be about 43,000 Rand for the 256 gig. 43,000 Rand.
Yo, highball-ish.
And 46,000 Rand for the half a gig, I mean, half a terabyte configuration, 512 gigabyte.
No,
50
no, no.
grand on a phone is no joke, eh? Absolutely no joke. You're gonna, it's like, even paying that off over 3 years is hurts you terribly. Yeah, small loan.
Yeah.
50,000 Rand. Would you ever find yourself, if I gave the phone to you for free, would you still use it, or would you get something cheaper because you just didn't feel comfortable?
It's a risk. You know, it will have to have insurance.
If you had insurance, you'd feel fine with it?
Yeah, I suppose. But
drop kick it? Use it as a screwdriver?
What would you do?
I would never get it, bro.
Yeah, I would never get it. And if it's free?
It's just too expensive.
Yeah.
I think the only reason...
It's risky walking around with something like that. It's bound to get stolen.
Getting stolen, insurance will cover it. Even if it gets dropped, probably insurance will cover it. It's just... There's something special about having a device in your hand that you're not absolutely terrified of damaging.
Yeah.
So if 50,000 Rand doesn't come easy to you, like the rest of us in the world... probably not worth getting it, because if you're sentimental about that value, that first scratch, second ding, mm-mm, is probably going to be traumatizing.
When it falls, it will literally kill you.
And I haven't seen many, and I don't know if they even exist, and this might be a good topic for the next tech show, but what does a screen protector and a phone cover for a foldable phone look like?
Does it exist?
Does it even exist?
Oh, good question.
It must exist, but exist very well? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know? So you're not going to have... You might not... I mean, it might exist, but it might not be that good. So you are essentially... You know, it's not just like a normal phone where you just hook on a screen protector and a phone cover and you're probably fine. This thing is a little bit more... I don't know. I would do it if I had the money, I think. If I was buying one of these a year and that could be something that I afford, I'd probably do it. But I definitely wouldn't. I wouldn't go buy, like, my 17-year-old me, if I had asked my parents for this phone, which 17-year-old me probably would have. I hope my parents would have hit 17-year-old me over the head. Telling me, no, you're not getting a phone like that, bro. But that's very interesting. That's the Galaxy Fold and Galaxy Flip 6 prices. Then we have... another look at Sturkinikor. When was the last time you went to Sturkinikor?
I think it was earlier this year, actually.
Really?
Yeah, just once. It was with my cousin.
Okay.
I went to see one of her movies, Mean Girls 2 or something.
Hey, that's not bad, really.
Yeah, but it was so awkward when everybody just started singing and turned into a musical, that movie. I wasn't expecting that.
And how was your cinema experience? You think it was good? Reminiscent of what
it was? Still summer and the aircon wasn't on. That's all I remember.
It was summer, a bit stuffy. And there was no aircon.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a tragic
one. And also I had to mortgage a house to get popcorn and
combo.
To buy the popcorn combo with the Smarties.
That food is expensive.
It was just, I'm just wondering, no wonder people smuggle the stuff in there.
70 Rand for a movie ticket and 700 for the food.
Yeah, but people, I've seen people smuggle their stuff in there, you know.
Man,
they pretend to have little bellies, but that's actually
I want nothing more than Sturkinikor to succeed, but I think the single greatest thing that they can do to succeed is don't mess the popcorn up. When I went there, we had stale popcorn.
That's the worst. No. Just take your own microwave popcorn.
You know when the popcorn's so stale that it doesn't actually break in your mouth? It just turns into a puck.
Oh,
you know,
no.
That's kind of...
That's the worst.
The worst.
Yeah, it's absolutely. No crunch. Oh, no, that's terrible. They can keep it.
So apparently Sturkinikor, and this is all about Sturkinikor trying to survive, wants to try and diversify its offerings by launching console gaming and learning experiences at its cinemas, according to CEO Mark Sardi. The South African cinema giant has been struggling recently, cutting 52 jobs and closing two movie theater locations in May and June 2024. Speaking to ENCA, Sardi explained that the company is looking at other avenues to generate revenue and use its cinemas. What we have is really big spaces in very attractive malls that are very secure. I think we've also got spaces where we can start to do other clever things like e-gaming. And I think you can bring an education element in there as well. I will admit, remember the... And this is actually a great time to bring this up. Remember the cinema in Eisner?
Oh, man. And it's literally... Eisner movie house.
And it's officially demolished. That building
is
officially...
Oh, my word, it was demolished, yeah.
Demolished. It doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's where Steers was and everything.
Yes, that's gone.
They flattened. What gone. They're going to build a new mall there or what?
All you can see now is those apartments in the background.
Are they going to build a new mall there?
That I think it's an extension of the existing mall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, I heard about that.
And I think what other shops are going to go there? I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I know that it's a better location than the Woodmore Lane. You've got the road from Woodmore Lane where you've got just that basic emptiness inside.
Oh,
that
that's
building.
Just the worst, eh? But remember, I told you I was at the Eisner Movie House just before they shut down permanently.
The last day.
Well, almost the last day. Last few days, and then they started a movie just for me.
Really?
Remember? I think I told you about this like 2 years, 3 years ago, maybe on the show, but maybe you forgot.
Solo movie house experience.
So I went there and I watched Spud. The movie.
Oh,
because I read the book and then I wanted to see the movie and then they started it just for me. I was sitting in the middle of the cinema all on my own and I felt like Richie Rich or something.
Richie Rich!
With my own cinema, my own cinema. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Show you how the dude was like starting the movie for me and everything.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So you were one of the last people to watch
it. It was nice, but I miss it, you know? Because you just want to break away sometimes and go there, you know, in the dark. Watch a nice movie, you know?
It would be good if it was still here. It's a pity it fell away, you know?
Very sad. I miss it, to be honest.
So that obviously is coming to a close of, you know, something a lot of us might remember. But regarding the education element, the CEO says Sturkinikor hopes to partner with schools to provide students with a safe environment from Monday to Thursday where they can learn things like coding. I don't know.
Sure.
So obviously they're trying to do like a learning experience thing as well where people can come from school and come get... taught inside of a cinema. I do agree that they have very big open spaces and those spaces are inside very nice, secure, fancy malls, and if they do the right thing they could create alternative experiences to just sitting down watching a movie. You could have like an arcade-like experience. It's going to be interesting to see where the line between learning center, gaming center and movie theater blur with this new refined Sturkinikor. But I'm sure we'll see. They also went on to say that if you want to play the Ferrari or Rolls-Royce version of the PS5, you can do so in the same venue. So obviously they're trying to create like a gaming, entertainment kind of... I'm sure there'll be live music performances, if not, you know, virtual experiences for live performance stuff. I think there's a lot of directions that they can go in terms of that virtual experience. So that's going to be very, very interesting. Apparently X, Twitter X, is stuck at 250 million daily users. As in previous unreleased figures, X said its number of globally daily active users in the second quarter of this year was 251 million, a rise of 1.6% in the same period. The stalled growth and general turmoil at X ever since Musk acquired Twitter in 2022 created opening for Zuckerberg's Threads to attract 175 million monthly users. Very good move by them.
Mm.
Of course, Twitter had 250 million users. Threads came out. We all made jokes about Threads, but it has 175 million monthly users. That's pretty impressive. Apparently, the Apple Vision Pro. The Vision Pro is Apple's VR headset that sells for a very affordable 70,000 Rand.
Yo.
Apparently has launched in 5 more countries today. Customers in Australia, Canada, France, Germany, and the UK can now buy Apple's VR headsets directly from Apple distributors. And it's the second wave of international expansion following recent China, Japan, and Singapore last month. While the headset launched in February, it was exclusive only to the US. Also, we've had Samsung Galaxy Unpacked, where we spoke, where they spoke about not just the Fold 6 and the Flip 6 that we spoke about, but also the Galaxy Ring, the Galaxy Watch 7, the Galaxy Buds 3 and 3 Pro, all made their appearances at Galaxy Unpacked. So if you're a Samsung Galaxy user and you're, you know, you're on the edge of the tech phrase, then the new Galaxy Ring is probably going to be something that you're interested in. We might even talk about it a bit on today's show if we have time. The Galaxy Watch 7 is obviously the newest watch, and the Galaxy Buds 3 are the newest buds. So there's a whole new array of accessories to pair with your S24 if that's something that you have already. And then also, we have some more stuff as well. Apparently, AMD will acquire an AI startup for $665 million. I'm sure AMD, for anyone who doesn't know, is NVIDIA's biggest competitor when it comes to the manufacturing of graphics cards, but has definitely become less of a competitor when compared to the sheer size of NVIDIA because of NVIDIA's AI explosion in terms of recent months. So if NVIDIA is AMD's competitor and AMD is going to still compete longer term, they need to get into AI. And obviously this acquisition of an AI startup for $665 million is that attempt, or at least maybe a partial piece of it. And the Finland-based Silo AI is described as the largest private AI lab in Europe and has provided AI solutions for companies like Philips, Rolls-Royce, and Unilever. In addition to Silo AI, AMD also acquired the AI startup Nod.ai last year as it aims to keep up with the likes of NVIDIA. Wow, that's interesting, eh? You've never really dabbled in graphics cards and things like that, dedicated desktop compute and
no, it only came. I just use whatever's given to me.
Really?
But so I'm not a gamer.
When are you ETAing your next big PC upgrade?
Oh,
would you
Lord
go to a
knows.
Desktop? Would you stick to a laptop?
Depends on Eskom.
Oh, that's a fair.
A laptop is nice for traveling, but I also miss, like, you know, that stability and sturdiness of a desktop is also
it
very
has
nice.
This durability feel.
Yeah.
It's not like a cat shoe durability.
Yeah.
But it is like a.
It just feels more, you know.
It has like the juice. It is very. You become very comfortable with it.
Yeah. You've got a desktop. Right?
I've got a desktop and laptop.
And laptop. Which one do you prefer?
Well, obviously, traveling laptop wins because the desktop cannot. But in terms of workflow
and performance,
productivity, performance, comfortability, experience, desktop.
Yeah,
it's just it might be old fashioned or whatever, but desktop.
No, it's brilliant.
Just
I agree.
Enables you to have a real fixed work environment, something that just gets the job done every single time, isn't trying to break the records in terms of power consumption or in terms of thermal distribution and things like that. The goal is to make a really small laptop and to make it really light. That's what every company wants to do. And the smaller you go, the more compact the components, the more heat it generates. And because they want a laptop and they want it to be quiet, they don't want a fan in it.
Exactly.
So laptop manufacturers are left with really clever thermal conductivity solutions to basically naturally get the heat away from the components and out of the laptop without having to drive it with a fan. That's why a MacBook Air, you never hear a fan inside of a MacBook Air in a dull XPS.
Hell no.
Normally you don't have that.
Yeah.
And those have those techniques that they use to keep it cool have to do with a passive cooling, because it's not like you can make a fan go faster and cool the laptop down faster. And you can't increase the rate of thermal conductivity. Think about it. If you have a pan on the stove, right, and it's heating up, and it's an electrical stove or whatever, and it's heating up, you can't make it heat up faster.
Mm-mm.
You can't make it distribute that. You can't press it down harder or do anything in the same way that if you had taken a massive fan and blew the fan on that same part, it will cool down. So when you don't have fans inside of a laptop, you have to rely on passive cooling it down, which means that if you're using a little bit of power out the laptop, it's not going to generate that much heat and it's going to be fine because that passive cooling is quick enough to maintain it. But when you start using more power from the laptop, when you start becoming a more demanding user, even if it's for a short period of time, you are now using a lot more power, which is generating a lot more heat. But the rate of heat distribution is not increasing in parallel to that. So the alternative then is this thing called throttling, thermal throttling, that when the tech or the components inside of your laptop reach a certain temperature and continue to exceed that temperature, it will reduce the amount that that component can perform. It will lower the voltage. It will reduce the amount of electricity moving through those components, and in doing that, reduce the excessive heat jet buildup. And your user experience of that is going to be the computer becomes slightly slower for a small period of time. And that's why the user experience on a laptop is very much defined by how much you're using the laptop itself. Because the only way it's capable of cooling down is to reduce the amount that it can do. So the more you do, the less you can do. And that's the problem with highly compact laptops and why desktops work.
Exactly. But tell people why they shouldn't put their laptops on their beds and block those air vents. Have you seen people do that, eh? I was like, you're smothering your laptop. Do you even realize you're doing it? No, I didn't even know.
In every way. So when you have the fanless design of a laptop and you're placing it on top of your bed, it's not as bad because you're not necessarily blocking airflow, but you are introducing less thermally conductive materials onto the laptop. And if it's less thermally conductive than air, then you're going to make the laptop slower because it's worse at heat, at cooling down, meaning it's going to become slower to maintain that operational temperature. And then when you have fans in the laptop, then your laptop becomes very heavy and it becomes very bulky. And this thing that's very portable now weighs 1.5 kg and, you know, needs a whole bunch of powerful charging cables and things like that. So the laptop game is very difficult to find that balance between portability and performance. And the closer you get to high performance, high portability, the more expensive it becomes. And that's why something like a MacBook Pro, MacBook Air, Dell XPS, or high-end Dell Latitudes, or HP ProBooks and things like that, they cost so much money. Because there's just so much design and engineering that goes into that small form laptop to maintain its temperatures and regulate its voltages and all that sort of stuff, that that's why you end up paying so much for a laptop. But that's an interesting, you know, interesting comparison there, definitely.
Yeah, good don't question. Put it on your bed, because sometimes you can even hear that the laptop is smothering, like the fan is sounding like a jet engine.
Yeah, it's going to be even worse if your laptop has a fan. You can hear a fan. You're putting it on top of your duvet.
Exactly. Yeah,
that thing will get hot enough to burn you, and it will just turn off.
It will turn off. It's like a protective mechanism, eh? But also, people do that, you know. I don't know if they do it in winter to warm up or whatever, but it's not good for your laptop.
Not at all.
You're not giving it air. And then, I mean, the only time your fan should spin like that is when you open Chrome.
20 tabs on Chrome.
Jet engine, take it off. That's really how it sounds. That's how heavy Chrome is. But anyway, let's go for some music quickly, and then a fascinating story from the UK. Welcome back to Tech Plus. Now, this is a very interesting story from the UK, all boys boarding school, Eton College. Starting this September, the school where Prince William went, as well as Harry and many other famous people, will give its youngest students Nokia phones, old bricks Nokia phones. I think probably the 3310, that can only make calls and send texts. So these phones won't be smartphones. So when year 9 students who are 13 get to campus, they'll have to put the SIM cards from their smartphones into their Nokia bricks that don't connect to the internet, and send their iPhones or Samsung Galaxy phones home with their parents. They want to do this because the college says it wants to keep age-appropriate controls in place, and it also banned smartphones in classrooms since 2018, and students in the lowest three levels have to turn in their electronics at night. In explaining the move, the college said there are challenges and potential areas for concern with smartphone use, especially around socialization, misuse, and overuse, and the impact on both mental and physical health. So come September, all the students there will get one of these, Kane, one of these 3310s. And the only thing they'll be able to do is text, like in the old days, send SMSs and make phone calls to their parents. What do you think of this move?
I've got something so funny to tell you. And it's so funny that you bring this up, man. So you, obviously all these kids are getting Nokia bricks so that they don't go on their phones and go on Instagram and TikTok and Twitter and do all that kind of stuff and search the internet and do all that kind of jazz. And they have a phone that can phone home, basically. They could call for help or support, but they can't go online and do anything. I saw yesterday on TikTok a new vape. It has a full Android system on it. You can make phone calls from this vape.
No,
okay, from the LCD screen. It can do text messages, WhatsApp.
Get out of town.
Games.
What?
YouTube, Netflix.
So they can just everything. Get, these students can just get vapes, basically.
They just pull out their vape. They got their Nokia. They just pull out their vape, have three chuffs.
Oh, my
and
word.
Then send a text, go online.
This is crazy. A vape that's able to do all that stuff. Eh?
That's crazy.
But do you think this move by the college will actually help?
It's a tricky question. It's like, do I think the, you know, two ways about it. You know, if you have two schools, one of the schools decides that kids aren't allowed to have a smartphone and they're only allowed to have a Nokia, little brick thing that can't do smartphone things. And the other school decides to fully embrace the use of technology insofar as AI, insofar as smartphones, insofar as VR, insofar as AR. All of, they fully embrace that. The kids that come out of that school, who do I think are going to be more capable for 2050? The school that embraces all of the
You're
tech.
Right.
So true. Is it the best idea? I have no idea. It's certainly a risk, and it has a high chance of success as well. It could be a great initiative. It could allow people to concentrate. But I think in this day and age, anything that I've learned over the last 25 years that I've spent growing up is you can't sleep on tech. So if you don't have your smartphone for 6 of 7 days in a week or 2 months of a year, you're at a disadvantage to some degree. If you use your phone for consuming junk and rubbish and you don't use it to boost your productivity, then it's useless. Think about it. If the guy with the Nokia never does anything to do with time management, he's just an Instagram addict. It's going to help him. But if the other guy doesn't care about Instagram or Twitter or TikTok or YouTube or any of it, he actually just uses it as a learning tool. He uses it to manage his day. He uses it to count his calories. He uses it to track his exercise. He uses it to track his water consumption. He tries to be the best human that he can be using the technology and the tools at his disposal that are not malicious in his mental capacity. He's going to outdo the guy with the Nokia every day.
Yeah.
He's going to walk circles around that guy. But only if he has the right mindset. So to the people with the wrong mindset, it will make them do good. But to the people with the right mindset, it will make them do bad.
Good answer, sir.
Interesting problem, eh?
I've always thought about that one. Yeah, very good answer.
Very difficult solution to fix. And I have respect for the college because what else do you do?
Yeah.
And trial is better when there's trial and error.
But you know, kids, they'll probably have like a secret room or something.
They're going to do it off their vape. They're going to have AR.
Yeah,
like, they're going to get around.
You just answered the question there. Everybody's going to vape all of a sudden at that school.
They will literally just vape it. I'm telling you. Next up, Starlink Mini. Remember we spoke about Starlink. The whole thing about Starlink is people in South Africa have Starlink and it costs 20,000 rand to buy all of the equipment and 1,000 rand a month to use it and it's this and that. And now Starlink Mini came out. So Starlink Mini is like, if you're thinking of getting Starlink and that 20,000 rand initial cost is too high for you, then this is the product for you. This is going to be your third of the price, fifth of the price alternative that is maybe half of the performance, but is extremely portable, extremely low setup, and very inexpensive in comparison to the official equipment. So that is definitely going to be something that you hear more about. I don't know when it will make its way to South Africa, considering South Africa is one of the only places in Africa to not have Starlink. But it is definitely an upgrade because not everybody can afford. Like if I told you, hey, would you like some internet? You're like, yeah, sure. Like, what's it going to be? Like 500 Rand, 1,500 Rand? No, 20,000 Rand once off plus 1,500 Rand a month. You're going to be like, no way.
No way.
I'm not going to survive that.
Mm-hmm.
That's too expensive. you know, unless you're someone who earns a living off of it or something like that. So this is going to be your cheaper alternative to your Starlink equipment that we'll probably see being imported from different vendors into South Africa over the next 2 to 3 years. There's no doubt. You're going to see them around. And I just don't know when Starlink will ever be available here in SA, but I know that all the equipment is always available here.
Yeah.
People have been selling that stuff for a long time. And then we have the Galaxy Ring. When you heard about a smartwatch, did you ever think there would be a smart ring?
No.
I definitely didn't.
Not my precious.
I definitely didn't.
No.
So apparently Samsung may have launched 3 new smartwatches this year, but the wearable that a lot of people have been most excited to see from the company was the Galaxy Ring. After months of testing, Samsung officially announced the $400, about 8,000 rand, smart ring at today's Unpacked event. Let me ask you this. Would you ever spend 8,000 rand on a watch?
Yeah, 1,000's fine.
Would you spend 8,000 rand on a ring?
No.
No. See, so that is a bit of an interesting comparison. Let's find out what it does.
Okay, give it to us.
I'm definitely not doing it yet. okay. Apparently someone finally got to play around with one, and they only spent a short time with the Galaxy Ring, but so far they did like what they see. Right off the bat, the Galaxy Ring hardware apparently is quite nice, though its overall design doesn't stray too far from other smart rings apparently. It comes in 3 colors, gold, silver, and black. All have a titanium frame and look relatively fetching, but like a magpie, apparently the person found themselves partial to the gold as it had a shiny finish, which some people don't like. Apparently it also has a water resistance of IP68 rating. I think that means it can go like a decent amount underwater. It is a ring. All rings that I know of are pretty water resistant, but this obviously has electronics in it. At 7 millimeters wide and 2.6 millimeters thick, it feels slimmer when worn on a relative finger. I'm pretty sure you get different sizes of the rings as well. I don't know my ring size, to be honest.
Yeah,
many people do.
No.
Especially not for each finger, considering each finger would probably be a different ring size. That's at least 5 different ring sizes on one person's hand. But apparently the Galaxy Ring can do all sorts of stuff. Like it can measure biometrics, it can identify, you know, how many calories that you're burning, it can do like a mood light. Remember mood light rings? Do you remember that?
Oh yeah.
Where the ring would tell you what mood you're in.
Yeah, that was pretty cool actually.
I just always didn't know if that was a scam or not. I feel like I would look to the ring for advice on how I should feel.
Yeah, exactly.
You should feel calm.
How should I
feel? Calm. Yeah. I feel calm. Yeah. But apparently also it can do things like be an alarm. So imagine you get woken up from sleep from a ringing ring.
A vibration on your middle finger.
Has your ring ever rung? Is that your ring ringing? That's going to take a while
my
to
word.
Settle in.
Oh no, Ken.
That's going to take a while.
Doesn't sound good.
Excuse me, sir. I think your ring is ringing. I don't know how to feel about that.
Oh, that's funny.
It literally comes in a little box. I don't know who's going to use this. 8,000 rand. Let us know in the comments if there's anything on this particular ring that you would use. But it's going to be a sensor. It's going to measure biometric data. It's going to be able to vibrate. It might even be able to tell you the weather. It might detect when you're grabbing something that's too hot to hold.
Whoa.
I think you might have other indicators that are letting you know that's a problem. But very interesting, Galaxy Ring. I didn't see it coming. I really didn't see it coming. I didn't expect an eye ring, you know.
I wonder if you put it on your middle finger and you show the middle finger to somebody, if it goes red or something, just for dramatic effect.
It finds their NFC and sends them a WhatsApp with the middle finger emoji.
You'll imagine, eh? In traffic.
That
oh,
is
my
too
word.
Funny. Apparently also now Microsoft's Copilot, if anybody doesn't know what Copilot is, if you're buying a new Windows PC these days, you probably see something called Copilot somewhere around there on your PC. And Copilot is basically like an AI assistant for Microsoft. It's an extension of ChatGPT and that sort of stuff. And apparently it can now understand your handwriting. So that's pretty crazy. I didn't really think that was any technology that was very, very like new. You know, cursive identifiers I'm sure have always existed, where you could like go in your phone and squiggle around and would pick up what you're writing. But the key difference there is when you're writing that, it has like a stencil of every single type of cursive curly letter that can be made. And if you're close to one of those, it will automatically assign that symbol or that letter to whatever you type. But when AI does it, it's interpretation. It's actually visually looking at what it is that you're writing and trying to piece together what it is, instead of comparing it to a million stencils of what this letter could potentially mean. So there's a fundamental difference between how the technology is doing it, and that's why AI will always do better than the stencils, because stencils will always have that element of inaccuracy, while a large language model will always be able to build cognition. It's like you whether it's scribbled, dotted, roughly drawn or whatever, if it's English written down, you're going to pick it up as English, you know. And you're going to be able to make it out. Like, have you ever seen those captures?
Oh yeah. Oh my word.
Now, if you want to understand why it is so powerful, is because they're literally saying that Copilot can complete captures, because it can literally look and interpret writing. So you're basically saying that AI can solve an anti-bot capture.
Those captures.
So a robot can solve an anti-robot capture better than a human can. And
are you a robot?
I think if Copilot can detect handwriting better than I had a friend in school who had the worst handwriting known to man.
Is he a doctor now?
No, I don't know, but I think he's a rocket scientist.
Probably. Usually really intelligent people.
But he had the world's worst handwriting, and I had a complete inability to interpret it. So this would come in handy for me.
I don't know if you noticed, you know, nowadays we're not really writing with the hand so much. I mean, I sometimes do daily, you know, because I still have a paper diary, old-fashioned. But have you noticed that your handwriting has deteriorated because of digital use?
I do think my handwriting has gotten a little bit worse, but my hand fatigue from writing happens very soon. Remember when you're in school, you're like writing.
You're so used to it. Yeah, you're right. Nowadays, we don't really write anymore. We fill in forms, one or two.
Two forms in my hands, like pinkies about to touch my wrist.
Scribbled a little note, but otherwise everything's digital, hey?
Yeah, we can't forget about those skills. Remember in school when you had to do the cursive patterns to
I was picturing the C now as you said it.
It's like waves, remember? It's like
that's how it all started.
I'll never forget that. And we always had to do it as like a separator to the start of a page. You put the date down and then you do this little squiggle across.
Oh my word, so you also did that, hey?
Remember that?
Yeah, and there can't be like any breaks. It has to touch.
Yeah.
Remember?
I remember that.
Oh, I miss it actually.
And on that note, is it time to end?
On that note, it's time to say goodbye. Kane, thank you so much as always. And I hope you're going to have a great weekend. And also to the Bokke, the Box, playing again this afternoon against Ireland.
Yes.
Hopefully you'll beat them again. Second time around in Durban. 100%. Go Bokke.
Go Bokke. Thank you so much for everyone listening in. See you same time, same place next week.
Cheers, Kane. Bye-bye.
Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.
This podcast was brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or through the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store.